He's Braden Gall. I'm Jason Fitz, Julian Council producing, Melody interning. This is Braden and Fitz on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Yeah, no intern, dude.
No intern. Well, you know,
sorry, man.
It's Breakfast Friday. We can start somewhere. You know, Breakfast Friday is always a good thing, right?
There you go.
So it's a happy Friday for all of you guys as the Nashville Predators have a big statement win last night. I know it's early in the season, but any chance you can get in this particular year to pick up a conference win, any chance you can get to pick up a win like that, it matters. And the Preds do it. They come out 4-1 winners, as you heard in the update. Samuel Girard with his first goal, so that's a nice little moment for him. Pekka, 30 saves, and the Preds come out 4-1 winners. Everybody gets Frosties. Everybody's happy.
Yeah, by far, not even close, the Predators' best performance of the season in the very, very, very early four-game stretch that we've got so far to look at. By far, I think one of the best performances from Pekka, certainly the best performance by the offense, and actually a really just good, quality, entertaining hockey game. Close game most of the way. The Preds sort of open it up in the third, and if they're not careful, Peter Laviolette, David Poile, they're not even going to have a decision with Samuel Girard. They're going to have him because everybody's in love with this kid. Scores a goal. He's got 3 points, got an assist as well, 3 points in two games. Let the cult following begin for young Mr. Samuelito, Sam Girard there.
You're dug in on the Samuelito thing.
Yeah, not really. Like I said it once yesterday.
You're going to make it happen.
No, but I'm trying to ease into it. You know what I mean? Like I'm trying to make it like subtle, and now you've called it out. You missed this, by the way, yesterday. So I had Crispy on at the end of the show yesterday, and I asked him to work in free stuff, if he could use the phrase free stuff on the television broadcast. I have a couple of tweets here saying that they didn't hear it last night. So we've got now a bone to pick with our favorite Preds analyst, Crispy, because apparently he did not. I watched the intermission reports, but I did not hear free stuff on the pregame broadcast from Terry Crisp. So I did that yesterday, Fitzy, without your approval. I want him to start working in Braden and Fitz phrases into the broadcast, if that's okay with you.
Right now, I'm not as much hurt as I am disappointed in Crispy. And you know what? Crispy, you're now my second favorite.
We'll talk with him next Friday, and we'll see if we can get it worked in. We just had to start. We need to get our brand into that television broadcast is what we really need to do, is what I'm trying to accomplish.
I think that's one of the best things you've ever – like that's a life mission right there. And that's well done, and I think we deserve it. I mean, I think – you and I, maybe we should just storm the booth one day.
We've pandered enough to him. I mean, come on, Crispy, you can do it. Plus, he's told me stories about how he and Pete Weber used to sit around in the early days of the Predators broadcast and try to figure out ways to work in really, really, really random phrases for money into broadcast. and you don't want to know the phrases. This is no big deal. Free stuff, you know. Hey, they had an empty netter last night. Could have very easily been, hey, PK Subban with some free stuff.
For
the
man.
Preds. See how that would have worked? That's a perfect way to work it in. So, no, great game last night. Best win, best performance, I think. And Sam Girard, man, the cult. Let the cult following begin for the young 19-year-old.
Oh, it is amazing how we all sort of gravitate to some of these young guys. He's just easy to root for. And you watch him, and you've suddenly seen this, and this is sort of, I think, because of we'll call it Arvi syndrome, because of what Arvi did last year, where for many people his leap was unexpected. Now we've all sort of got our eyes big and wide, and we're looking everywhere, and we're like, who's going to be next? Who's going to be next? So when we see young guys play at a high level, and this is – it's Gaudreau was the next piece of that, right? Like we saw it in the Stanley Cup Final, and everybody sort of became infatuated with that. I feel the same thing happening for Girard right now. But you're right. The more he contributes, he's going to make a decision – you know, he's going to make this decision more and more difficult, and that's ultimately great for the future.
It's hard not to look at him and think he's the fifth best defenseman, at least in the future. Maybe right now. He's very, very talented, very poised, obviously very good on offense. He's what the Predators want, that speed, that ability to move the puck. He's just fun to watch, and things happen when he's around the puck. And sure, he's got a lot to learn, and he's got a lot to develop, but, man, he's fun to watch. So he's going to make the decision, it looks like, on the Predators, very difficult. They've got 7 more games they can use him. I think like 18 or 19 total games they can to evaluate him without playing him in a couple of those total. So they're going to have to make a decision on him probably in the next couple of weeks, maybe a month. So he's making it hard on him, and that's what you want as a Preds fan. You want to see guys like that contributing. And you mentioned Gaudreau. you know, a little different story there. Goudreau is a guy who sort of is undrafted, and, you know, Johnny overachiever, works his way through the system. This is a guy who's a premier prospect, a top-flight guy that was supposed to be this good and looks like he could be that good. And it's just another testament to the job David Poyle's done, you know, building a roster and building a franchise.
A little bit there, though, where we've been conditioned as a franchise and as a fan base with the mindset for a generation of, you draft a guy, and it takes a few years before we can actually see viable contributions. And then once they get up, you know, it can take a little bit of time once they're in the bigs to sort of make their mark. Like, we've been conditioned as a fan base that for the principle of patience on these things. And so when you see somebody, you're right, that obviously was a big-time prospect, this is sort of where the new Preds are. The new Preds are, you never know who can come in and contribute right away. It's interesting to see that change, and I think the fan base is starting to change gradually after years of feeling like you had to watch a guy and just remember that, hey, if he's drafted, it might be 5 years till you actually see anything from him. That mindset's being changed by the play of some of these guys.
Yeah, absolutely. By the way, Skeeter on Twitter just says, Crispy said it in pregame, giving his three things to know. He said it read free stuff for us. As one of his three things to know.
Done.
So, well done, well Crispy. Done.
Crispy,
if
right
anyone's got any audio of that, which we do not have, of course, hopefully we can get some audio of that. Well done. Now we have to think of another one for Crispy next week. Awesome job, Crispy.
Crispy, absolutely. I never waffled on it at all. You've always been my favorite. So, that's how easily I am bought. No, Crispy, that's a really cool moment for him. So we will do a ceremonial soft shoe tap dance routine for you whenever you would like.
You're such an idiot. What the heck is a ceremonial soft shoe tap dance?
I have no idea.
What is that?
A soft shoe is like a type of tap.
Of course,
I mean,
it is.
You watch a little bit of White Christmas, you'll get some of that. That
is that
soft
like the
shoe
Fond du Lac that you put on a cake?
It's fondant. It's fondant. Everybody knows
Johnny Cash
fondant
song, I think.
Speaking of Crispy, obviously, we should remind everybody that we have Hal Gill coming up today later on at 8:30. Hal Gill. And I had the chance a couple of nights ago to host the Smashville Live show with Hal. And it's really, as we talk about sort of fan expectations, it's pretty cool. It was pretty cool to see how packed Tin Roof was. Also pretty cool to see sort of the response and the connection the city has with the players. But I got to give Hal a lot of credit. He does great work. So we took a selfie that we put out there on social for everybody that his head's completely cut off because
he's
I'm
tall.
Not going to angle my. He's just too much. He's too much tall. He's way too tall. Just too tall. It's too tall and too high. So Hal Gill going to join us today at 8:30. Always going to be a good one. And I think that this is it's a reminder, too, that the overreaction, because wasn't it just a few days ago that we were saying, oh, this team can't generate goals? And now that whole conversation has gone away completely. This is sort of what we're expecting for the first 15, 20 games, right? Up and down?
Yeah, up and down, and two really good performances at home. Certainly, I think, a better performance than Tuesday, where you sort of had these big, long stretches of you know, kind of unfocused hockey. I think last night you saw, from 1 to 23 or whatever, that was the best performance of the season. Again, only four games to go on, but I think also came in the most important game of the season, I mean, so far. When you talk about a division opponent, Crispy called it the four-point game. You know, you get two, they don't, and they're in the division. You know, Ben Bishop has been really good for the Stars so far early. That could solve some of their issues. They're a little bit better on defense, but we know how good they are on offense. That's going to be a dangerous team all season long. And you started off 1-0 against your division opponents. So I think that's a big deal. Now you got a chance to go on the road on Saturday and tomorrow night, pick up some points in the division and continue to play good hockey. And 3-2 feels a lot different than you know, 1-4, which is so – the way Tuesday night played out, they easily could have lost that game. And so I think they really carried that momentum into last night, and that's a big win in the division in the Western Conference, first one of the season. Best performance of the year so far by the Predators.
Well, and you mentioned carrying momentum. I think that's one of the keys we wanted to see if they could do after the big comeback the other night. And that's key also. The division is something that we've talked so much over the summer about how good this division is, how tightly packed this division is, and how a point here or there could make a huge difference. So games like last night actually do matter. As much as we come back and we sort of laugh and we say, hey, look, there's 763 games left. Everybody calm down. Anytime you can get a win over a division opponent at this point, as tightly packed as it's going to be, I think that's key, and I don't want to underplay how significant that is. Also, don't forget ESPN 102.5 The Game, your flagship station for the reigning Western Conference champions, obviously. the Nashville Predators. Make sure you follow us on all the socials, Instagram, Twitter. Like us on Facebook. You can keep up with everything going on in Smashville. Twitter at 1025 The Game, Instagram at The Game Nashville, Facebook, obviously facebook.com/TheGameNashville. So get out there and keep up with everything. When we come back after the game, our very own Chase McCabe had the chance to talk to Ryan Johansson. You'll hear that. And a big opponent coming this weekend. What's it mean? How fired up is everybody? We'll answer those questions next. Braden and Fitz, ESPN, 1025 The Game. He's Braden Gall. I'm Jason Fitz. This is Braden and Fitz on ESPN 1025 The Game. 615-737-1025 to hang out with us.
That's Julian Council's tribute to the Philadelphia Eagles, I believe, and Doug Peterson.
Oh, is that what that, is that what we're doing, Julian? We're tributing
the Eagles? Two really good football teams last night, by the way.
No, I wouldn't call it a tribute. Just a good song I'm playing on a Friday.
There's that level, Julian, that that we always miss so much. So we'll obviously get into a bunch of what's going to happen over the course of the weekend. Don't forget, Buck Rising going to join us 7:15. Got some Titans talk to get into with him. Hal Gill at 8:30. Jordan Rogers in the 9 o'clock hour. And the mayor. That's right. We're getting so classy around here. The mayor's joining us. 7:45. Mayor Megan Berry going to join us. Really excited about that. So huge show today. Obviously, catching you up on everything that happened last night. After the game, our very own Chase McCabe had the chance to talk to Ryan Johansson. We want you to hear that. This is Johansson and Chase one-on-one.
I'm here with Ryan Johansson after the Predators' 4-1 win over the Dallas Stars. And let's start with the first period. Obviously, you guys down 1-0. What was the conversation like in that first intermission to come out and have a completely different second?
Yeah, we, you know, obviously it wasn't a start we would have liked, so obviously we just had to adjust a little bit and get our team game going a little bit more. And once we did that, we took over and we controlled the rest of the game.
Do you feel like that was important, especially first matchup against a Central Division opponent? A lot's been made about the offense of the Dallas Stars. You guys come out and show your offensive prowess there in the second and the third.
Yeah, it's always fun playing those guys. They're always a tough matchup, and obviously being in the division, it's a big, big 2 points, and we're happy with the result we got tonight, and the way we're taking steps in the right direction.
You're a veteran on this team, and I know he's standing right next to you, but how impressive have you been with Sam Girard? First 2 games, he gets his first goal tonight. It's been fun to watch.
Yeah, I know he's been fun to watch for us too. He's going out there and he's playing his game, and he's having confidence within his abilities, and then his talent's just taking over. So, you know, for him and moving forward, he's just got to keep being himself, keep believing in himself, and using his creativity and his poise, and he's making a difference on our back end right now.
How about the play of Phil right now with this first line? Obviously, you've centered him, but he has really turned it on in the early going of this season.
Yeah, I know. He last couple years he hasn't had starts that he would have liked, so it's awesome to see him having a scoring touch right now. And the way he's winning his one-on-one battles and competing on pucks and stuff, he's been fun to play with and start with here. And we're gonna keep trying to get him the puck in those scoring areas.
I know you guys take it one game at a time. This one's in the books. You know what's coming up Saturday against Chicago. What are you guys expecting going into their barn for the first time since the playoffs?
Yep, they've had a good start to the year. They've brought some old faces back in, and they're a hungry team, and they're always a tough opponent, and I'm sure they're not happy the way they went out against us last year. So we'll enjoy this one here for a little bit, and then we'll shift our focus to them and making sure we prepare ourselves. So for a tough game there.
Awesome. Hey, appreciate it as always. Thanks.
So that's Ryan Johansson last night with Chase McKay. By the way, Johansson and Bonino, Ryan Johansson, Nick Bonino, going to be the next guests on Smashville Live on October 25th. Yeah, I got to. So we went from all the Finnish players, like the entire country of Finland joined us last time. This time it's going to be Bonino and Johansson. So that should be a fun time, October 25th.
The Centerman edition. Yeah.
Yeah. That's going to be a good one. Tin Roof downtown this time. So it's interesting at the end of that one, Braden, he mentioned that Chicago is going to be kind of fired up. I think that there's a small level of Nashville that got enough under the skin of enough different teams that they're sort of, I don't want to say that they're marked, but it feels like when they go into certain cities, Chicago, Pittsburgh, Anaheim, I feel like the teams from last year's playoff run have a little bit of a chip on their shoulder towards Nashville. It's going to be interesting to see them play through because Chicago is not going to be a pretty matchup.
No, I would expect Chicago to be pretty angry about everything, just in general, when the Predators come to town tomorrow night. And that, you know, listen, I would pick Chicago tomorrow. I think they're at home and there's revenge on the mind. So I think that all plays into this. I will say one of my favorite things about the entire run, just as a completely unobjective, subjective fan of the Nashville Predators, to see other teams so angry with this franchise because they were winning and doing things to the other teams, that's like a little bit of trolley joy in my heart about that. But that's what really truly does build rivalries, and it builds connection, and it builds hockey up in this town, and it builds Nashville up in other people's minds outside of this city. So I think that's a really fun, awesome, amazing part of this whole run, is that now St. Louis hates us, and now Chicago hates us, and now Pittsburgh hates us, and we sort of already hated Anaheim, but they don't really care about hockey, so whatever. Well, the other three teams, they kind of hate us now, and I would take Chicago tomorrow if we were making picks. I think that they're going to go in there, and Chicago's going to be super, super fired up and ready to go. Also in that interview there with Johansson, I think one of the things that you and I have talked about, P.K. Subban, also a goal and an assist last night as well. I don't think there's any question P.K. Subban and Philip Forsberg are the best two players on the team right now. There are a lot of good players, but those two guys have come out of the gate in a really big way, and it's one of those things we've been waiting for with Forsberg. People forget he's still very, very young. Has had multiple 30-goal seasons, but he's already looking like this is going to be a monster season. And it's time the rest of the NHL sort of sits up and takes note of how good he is. He has to deliver consistently over an 82-game season to earn that, but so far, so good. Holy cow, he is off to an awesome start. And P.K. Subban now a goal and five assists already as well on his ledger. So both of those guys playing at a high, high level right out of the gate. Those are the two. What you need to be a good team for 82 games, you need your best players to carry you. And those are two of the most talented human beings in Predators history, basically, and they're off to a really, really good start right now.
Yeah, no doubt about that. We'll disagree on the top two players on the team, though. I will say that because I would put PK in there, obviously, but I don't want to take for granted what Pekka is as a player because he's still a top goalie and he's still a top player on this team.
Is it okay to be the most important player on the team and not the most talented player on the team?
Yes.
I mean, his best days were 3 years ago. His best days were 4 years ago.
There's no doubt. But in the first couple of the games, how many times did he look like Michael Jackson in his prime, spinning around, grabbing everything? So even when the team wasn't playing well in front of him, he still manages to keep this game close. So I wouldn't downplay him personally. And then I think that, you know, you have solely dragged me on the Ryan Johansson train of just absolute physical ability to create and make everybody around you better. I don't want to undervalue that either. So I would.
No, there's a lot of good players. And I mean, Roman Josi, hello.
Yeah.
So I just, PK, I think Forsberg is the most talented player I've ever seen in a Predators uniform. I think from an offensive domination, size, speed, talent. I think just, you know, when you talk about Adrian Peterson and just like his raw ability, right? Like just size, speed, power. That kind of stuff. Like when you talk about talent, that's sort of what I think of when I think of talent. And I think Forsberg has the chance to be the most talented Predator of all time. P.K. Subban already is just like one of the most talented players. So I you're right, Roman Josi, Ryan Johansson. I think you put all those guys in that mix. I think Pekka's the most important Predator for the season. I don't think there's any question about that.
It is interesting though to have this sort of embarrassment of riches, as they say. That again, we're talking about sort of where the franchise is today. It's not hasn't always been that way. We shouldn't forget that. I also think it's funny to go back to your conversation earlier about how many cities and other fan bases got angry with the Preds in the last playoff run. And I've said this often to people. If you're that guy that's angry because Nashville, air quote, hasn't accomplished anything, as so many people say, you guys haven't accomplished anything, then why are you mad? Like, if the team hasn't accomplished anything, then we should be far enough beneath you if you've accomplished all these things that you don't even care. And that's
when's the last time St. Louis won a Western Conference championship?
Oh, no doubt. But I just think the overall negativity coming toward it it's interesting to me. And I think that it does put sort of a target on the back of the Preds in some of these games. Chicago's going to be angry on Saturday night. You're right. Yeah, yeah. It'd be a big statement for the team to be able to go in and sort of take that anger And I'm going to get all Star Wars on it, but, you know, take that dark side and you know, maybe bring them all to the light
no,
side.
No, I really that's a really good point about the game tomorrow night. I think if they somehow go up there and get a W, I think it's a huge statement. Because you know it's a hostile situation. You know they're super, super fired up and angry about what happened last year. And they're still the big dog on the team on the block, and they still continue to win divisions. They're still the team with three cups. They're still all of that stuff. Just because you swept them doesn't change history. And Johansson said it. He's like they've brought back some old faces. If you're a Predators fan, you probably hate Brandon Saad, and now he's back scoring goals for them, and because of what he did to the Predators in the playoffs a couple of years ago. So there's some old faces there with some old rivalries and old grudges, and now there's a new chapter in that book, and that is a pure and utter dominating sweep by the Nashville Predators to eliminate the top seed in the Western Conference. They're going to be fired up, and if the Preds can actually win that game, man, that is a big, big statement, I think. Even, as much as a early regular season game can be, that's a big statement tomorrow night. It's probably why I'm picking Chicago.
Well, speaking of statements to be made, there's a statement to be made for the Vols this weekend. Obviously, it's a big weekend for Butch Jones. I've got a direct question for you, Braden. Is there anything Butch does on Saturday that means he's not the head coach on Monday? We'll answer that question. We'll do that next up, Braden and Fitz, ESPN, 102.5 The Game. Hey, Julian, how do you feel about some early morning freestyle?
Yeah, go ahead.
Freestyle! All right, caller number 5-615-737-1025. 615-737-1025. Going to win you an NHL Network prize pack. Prize pack includes a t-shirt, a hat, a koozie, a bag keychain, and a plush bike. Plush bike. NHL Network prize pack, caller number 5-615-737-1025. Braden, I will never get tired of saying plush bike.
Clearly.
No, it's my favorite part of the show every day.
Oh,
no
tremendous. No, none taken. None taken. It's a plush bike. What can I do?
It's a plush. Well, you know me and toys. Somebody the other day for the Preds Player Show, you know those Funko Pops that you make fun of me for having all the time?
I have never made fun of you for that.
But, well, those Funko Pops that you have uniquely observed I might be too old and too manly to own. Somebody actually had a custom one made of Pekka and brought it and gave it to him.
Ooh, that's like, pretty cool.
That was strong. That was a very strong
Can
present.
Can this same person make a custom version of Braden and Fitz, more importantly?
That is a fantastic question.
Right?
That's not pandering, right?
If you all I care about is the show, Fitzy.
Well,
we got free stuff onto the Preds broadcast yesterday, so we're good.
That is a heck of an accomplishment. I'm quite proud of everybody involved in that. And you know, I like to bring all this positivity and joy because I'm about to say two words that makes skin crawl and makes people angry as they're driving. Butch Jones. But here's my question to you about Butch this point. Realistically, and I'm not like no crazy weird scenarios. In your mind, is there a realistic scenario of something that can happen on Saturday that results in Butch Jones not being the head coach on Monday morning?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's pretty easy and pretty simple. Another performance like Georgia, if it is and I don't think South Carolina is capable of this, but if it is an utter whitewashing and the building is half empty in the second half or, you know, a quarter or a third empty in the first half, and it's a non-competitive offense that can't move the football, it's a defense that's not getting pressure on Jake Bentley, and he's just lighting people up. And it's anything more than a three to – I think if you get to – it might even be just two scores. If you lose by 14 or more at home to South Carolina, that might be it. If it's a really close game and South Carolina does something, maybe. But I think there are a lot more ways he gets fired over the weekend than there are ways he doesn't get fired, and that is not a way you want to enter a weekend football game. As a head coach. So I think if it is an ugly game and they are non-competitive and it looks like the team has quit on him and there's problems on the offense at quarterback and there's problems on the defensive line, I think you put all that together, I think there's absolutely an opportunity that the administration makes a move. More importantly, I think it has to be tied directly to the fans. I think the most important aspect of this weekend for John Curry and the athletic department is the fans. If they still show up like they did for the Georgia game, then you know that they're still supporting the team. And that is still the most important aspect of any head football coach's job. Our butts in seats are their paying customers. It's a business. And if people still show up and they're fired up, then I don't think the outcome affects the team as much. If it's a sparser crowd and there's 82,000 people actually in attendance and 30,000 empty seats and then they play really poorly, yeah, I think there absolutely could be something that happens, but I think it would have to go that direction for it to happen.
Well, and that's – I don't think that direction should happen. I mean, there's a point where we've talked so much about what this team looks like, and as much credit as we were giving South Carolina going into the season – I don't think today, if you just look at these two teams on paper, I don't think that the Vols should lose this game in a non-competitive way. So while we're having a that could happen, I don't think that should happen, right? I think that I'm not saying that the Vols necessarily have to win this game, but I'd be pretty surprised if they actually just got thrashed by South Carolina, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I don't think South Carolina is built that. I don't think they're that good yet. But never underestimate the ability to suck if you're Tennessee and Butch Jones, I guess. So I don't think South Carolina is that good. I don't think they've got a nice quarterback. They've got a couple of players. But I think defensively they're one of the worst teams in the SEC. Their offensive line is giving up 16 sacks, 33 tackles for loss. They're one of the worst teams in the SEC at allowing penetration on the defensive line. Tennessee still has some guys there that can make plays. Certainly a thin roster at defensive line for Tennessee, but some guys that can make plays, look for bigger roles from Kyle, guys like Kyle Phillips this weekend. So there are opportunities. I mean, the offense, how does it look? How does Jarrett Garitano look? What kind of adjustments do they make to the offense to fit around the new quarterback, the ability to run the football? I think Ty Chandler getting more involved, I think, is something that a lot of fans want to see. So I think those – you run the football a little bit, you keep it close, then I think it keeps the natives at bay for just a couple of more days or a couple of more weeks. The problem is, I think if you beat South Carolina and you win the game, and so that essentially staves off elimination for Butch Jones, let's call it that. I don't know how the Bama game influences anything, because we knew the Bama outcome in January, we knew the Bama outcome in March, we knew the Bama outcome in July, we knew the Bama outcome in Week 1, we know the Bama outcome right now. Bama's going to win big, and that's just the way it is because they're Bama. It has nothing to do with Butch Jones in Tennessee. So I don't know how the Bama game changes anything. So that you'd think you'd have a stay of execution for at least 2 weeks if you beat South Carolina.
I feel like the beacon of light in this situation for Vols fans is y'all are probably going to see you're going to see something new at quarterback, and that's at least going to answer a question. Sometimes I think that when you have these quarterback situations where everybody feels like the other guy should start, the only good that you know automatically is the what if is going to finally be answered. So for all the people that are sitting there saying the wrong quarterback decision has been made, you got to get Dormady out of there, however they're facing it, that will actually be answered. Not speculated on anymore. We'll actually get an answer to a certain degree of what there is at quarterback and Jarrett Garitano. So it will calm the nerves or hush it's going to hush everybody up that really wants that right now. So that's a positive that does come out of this game. No matter how it happens, you'll at least get that definitively answered.
Yeah, no question. And that's the debate. That's part of why I thought there was a conspiracy. That's why I love the conspiracy theory about the UMass game, that Butch put him out there to say, win the job, dude. And Gary Danielson was talking about it the very next week against Georgia. He's like, it's almost like they were asking him to not save the day, but like, either show everybody that you're ready or show everybody that you're not. And he certainly showed everybody that he wasn't ready at that time. How much we just had this conversation about Matt Cassel. How much does a full week of practice and an offense built around you help you in that moment? Well, this is obviously a different deal. This is a college game with lower level competition, an offense that's looking to run the quarterback, not Matt Cassel, the opposite of that. And you had 2 weeks to do it. So maybe there's an ability to make something happen. But you're right. It'll be the first real chapter in the Jarrett Garitano sort of book in Knoxville, and we'll find out if the offense is in fact going to have some signs of life and upside and the ability to grow in the second half of the season, or we're going to find out if these two quarterbacks just aren't the answer right now today for Tennessee. And the other thing is you can't – everybody's – like you've said this a couple times too – you can rip on Butch for these two guys not being ready to play. That's definitely coaching. But you cannot rip on Butch for recruiting these two players, because everybody in the entire country wanted Quentin Dormady and everybody in the entire country wanted Jarrett Garitano. These guys were not small recruits. They were bigger level recruits, especially Garitano. So you can't – it's hard to say, oh, you know, if you're a Georgia fan, oh, you guys don't have a quarterback. Well, these guys were high-level recruits. Everybody wanted them. I think Dormady had a lot of really good offers on his ledger. So these were high-level recruits coming out of high school.
Well, here's what I know. When it's all said and done, either way, whether you're celebrating or whether you're drinking away your misery, don't miss the 2017 Nashville Whiskey Festival presented by Midtown Corkworks Wine, Spirits, and Beer. The festival is at the Omni Nashville Hotel. Saturday, we've been telling you about it, October 14th, 6:30 to 10:30 p.m. It is truly a blast and amazing experience. For more info, visit NashvilleWhiskeyFestival.com. Get out there and do that today. And either way, you'll feel better after the game. It'll continue your celebration, or you will be able to drown your sorrows in high-quality whiskey.
And we'll help you and pat you on the back the whole time.
Yes. For sure. I'm actually going with a bunch of guys. So if you see a bunch of drunk guys walking around sampling whiskeys, high five us all. That's what I ask, and we'll be around. So if you see either of us, long hugs are totally appropriate at the Whiskey Festival, right?
Okay.
Yeah. So here's the thing, for everything you mentioned it a second ago, but I think there's one reason why, if I'm a Vols fan, I really want Butch fired Monday, and it sounds crazy, I know, but we'll tell you what the reason is. I'll break down sort of my logic on it and see what Braden thinks. We'll do all of that next. Braden and Fitz, ESPN 102.5 The Game. It's Braden and Fitz coming at you live from the Game Nashville Studios, presented by Wholesale Inc. of Mount Juliet.
I just watched the Star Wars trailer during the commercial break. I'm very angry right now.
Why are you angry?
I don't like how the preview ended. I'm angry.
Oh, I cannot wait for that movie.
I can't either.
We should show like a show excursion.
Ooh,
we all
yes.
go as a show.
Let's do that. That's great idea.
I'm in on this. All in on this.
I'm very disturbed by how the end of that trailer ended. So I'm
Remember, Empire Strikes Back was sort of the deep dark episode of the original trilogy. I expect this to be the same. I expect this to make everybody uncomfortable.
I'm already uncomfortable.
I cannot wait. I can't. The level of excitement that these two sports nerds have over Star Wars is not okay. So hear me out, okay, Braden, because I have this statement that I think what's best for everybody is if Butch gets fired on Monday. And I really wish it had already happened because I think it would be even better for everybody. But in this situation, I'm still going to go actively. Whatever result gets Butch Jones out on Monday is the best possible scenario. And I got that a little bit from just hanging out and getting to talk about the situation so much with you over the course of the week. It's really, this is where my logic comes from. So you sort of helped influence this. Tell me if I'm crazy. You mentioned earlier.
Now I'm actually nervous.
Well, that's a fair point. You mentioned Coach O earlier this week. And I think back to the Coach O situation where, and Les Miles. So LSU has sort of botched this a couple of times. Les Miles going to be fired. No, he's not going to be fired. Goes off on the players' shoulders. Had just enough success at the end of the year that everybody felt good about, felt good about Les Miles. And then all of a sudden, the next season starts, they realize that was a mistake. Coach O comes in, has just enough success that everybody feels good about Coach O. And now there are many within that program that already seem to feel like that was a mistake. I fear that Butch Jones in the back half of the season will have just enough success by beating who he has to beat and just looking just good enough that everybody looks around and they're like, well, let's give it another year. And that will be maddening for the anti-Butch fans. I think that if you're sitting here saying the best thing for the program is to wholly move forward, then I think that whatever it takes for him to get fired as soon as possible is actually a benefit, because every week he's around is a week he could somehow, through just mediocrity, keep his job.
Now, I like the theory, and I understand that. Now, one of my biggest issues with the LSU analogy here, and this is one of my biggest asks of the athletic department at Tennessee, is don't handle this like a high school lunchroom. Don't like Joe Oliva handled this like almost in public. There's long articles written by established journalists in Baton Rouge who are citing sources high up in the athletic department that this decision has been made or will be made this weekend. And then there's 6 weeks of this crap. That's one of the biggest flaws in what happened at LSU, is that the inmates started running the asylum. And then they let the emotion of one win over Texas A&M get to them and the administration. And even though, and this is what I always say about that situation, 60,000 people, 80,000 people are at Tiger Stadium that night, right? Like carrying Coach O's being carried off, and they're all cheering. Those are probably the same 80,000 people that were on the message board the night before calling for Les Miles' head. So that's why you can't let fans dictate this kind of stuff. And that's my biggest issue with this is John Curry needs to be in complete control. He needs to be calm, cool, and collected, and he needs to be deciding these things behind closed doors. So I that's the one part of the analogy that I want that Curry can control and Tennessee can control. But here's my thing, though. I'll say this about actually Butch and the winning and the losing versus, you know, what kind of impact that has on his tenure there. I think you can have your cake and eat it too here. I think you can win some games as a Tennessee fan and watch the games and get some wins out of the deal, and still Butch Jones is going to be fired. So I think there is some cake and eat it too here because I think they're going to lose to Bama. They're probably going to lose at least one more other game. And if that other game is Kentucky and then they lose to LSU – You could still finish with a 7-5 record, get to a bowl game, win 8 games, and have a relatively, you know, you could have a winning season with a developing quarterback and a lot of young offensive talent and still get your coach fired. So I think there's a chance that both happen for Tennessee fans. Because what you don't want is, and this is sort of what you're saying, if you lose to South Carolina, first of all, you have to deal with the pain of getting beaten by South Carolina at home, which has only happened 2 other times in history. And you're going to lose at home to South Carolina, so then you're embarrassed on the football field, and you know that your coach is getting fired. So does that make sense? I think there's I'm not sure. I think the hay might be out of the barn on Butch Jones at this point. I think the decision might already be made, and unless you're getting Chip Kelly, who's a guy who's just sitting there waiting to take a job, and you could hire an entire second coaching staff. I don't think he wants anything in the SEC. I think he wants something out west. Unless you can hire the guy immediately, I don't know what it buys you to get rid of the coach immediately. That's what I'm trying to get my head around. And that's why smarter people than you and I, Fitzy, are running athletic departments right now.
Now, I'm with you 100% that dealing with behind closed doors is the best way to do it. My only fear is that, again, there's a quarterback change being made right now, right? So if we see over the course of the last half of the season this development at quarterback and we see the team playing better and, you know, they again, to your point, they finish in that 7-5 range, but the team gets better in the process and the quarterback looks better in the process and they don't see the guy out there that's an immediate, hey, this thing's going to be better, then my fear is that they're going to keep Butch. And if you're an anti-Butch guy, so you got to watch a 7-5 season where you could have a little bit of hope. But is that worth it if Butch is your returning coach?
It's sort of the opposite of the question you asked last segment where you say, what is it that could happen that could get Butch fired this weekend? I think the more difficult question is, what is it that Butch can do to keep his job? I think that's the more difficult question. And I really do think he has to beat Alabama. I really do. Like that. So to me, like, well, basically what I'm saying is that it's a done deal already and that I'm not worried about no matter what he does, no matter what Jared Carantano does, no matter how the offense looks over the course of the last half of the season. To me, and this is the job, this actually is a great example of how fans are not good athletic directors. John Curry, his job is to take out of it, hey, that the quarterback has developed and that the offense looks a little bit better. His job is to take that out of it and say, regardless of what happens over the last month of the season, do we have a candidate that we think is the best option for Tennessee football, or a couple of candidates that we've maybe back-channeled and reached out to and said, hey, would you be interested? And the agent says, yeah, probably might be interested. And, you know, even though all that's illegal technically, that's how it works. We know how the business works. I think barring an upset of Alabama, I'm not sure there's anything he can do to save his job. Now, if they run the table and beat everybody and maybe they lose to Alabama close and the quarterback looks like a superstar, maybe there's a 5 or 10% chance. But you're basically saying, hey, I'm not willing to take that chance. But at that point, you would have beaten LSU, Kentucky, Missouri, Vanderbilt, and South Carolina. You would have finished 9-3, and you would have had an entire quarterback and offense develop over the course of the second half of the season. Would that be enough to save his job? And would that be good enough? Because it would actually be an improvement on last year in a year when you weren't supposed to improve.
Yeah, I mean, to me, if you're telling me that happens, that they finished 9-3, you know, again, I'm saying that I feel like go ahead and fire him now. But if he finishes 8-4 at this point with the remaining schedule.
That's the tricky one.
If he finishes 8-4, I personally, from the outside looking in, would keep him unless I had some other great option that I'm 100% sure is going to be better. Because
That's a unicorn.
Right.
That doesn't exist. Unless it's Bob Stoops or Chip Kelly. Like, really. Right. Like, unless it's – like, you're not – Jim Harbaugh –
unless I'm hiring a brand.
Right.
Like, if you're just telling me that you're going to go hire this hot coordinator, then you're rolling the dice again. And
completely.
So I look at 8-4 and say, hey, if with the injuries mounting and with what was expected in my mind to be a transition year anyway, if he pulls out 8-4 and that would mean the rest of the way he loses to Alabama and only one other team, I don't think that's the end of the world personally. So,
right.
But that if I'm anti-Butch, that's what I'm rooting against because. You know, in my mind, 8-4, it would be crazy for him to be fired.
Well, it creates doubt, right, on both sides of the spectrum. You're not sure if he's the bad coach. You're not sure if he's the wrong answer. You guys know where I stand on Butch. I think he's done a really, really good job for this program, but I think there might be a point where he's topped out, and I feel like that's certainly the case right now. But who else are you going to go get? Like, fans want to think that, like, John Gruden is an option. He's not an option. I'm not even sure he'd be a great coach. Peyton Manning is not an option. Stop asking about Peyton Manning. Jim Harbaugh is not interested in coming to Knoxville. I don't care what his record is against Michigan State and Ohio State. Jim Harbaugh's not coming to Knoxville. If he is, I would fire Butch Jones today, shake his hand, and say, thanks, dude, and slap him on the ass on the way out the door because Jim Harbaugh would be a superstar hire at Tennessee. Those guys aren't sitting there waiting to take the Tennessee job. Like, they're not. And Bob Stoops wants the Notre Dame job. Chip Kelly, I think, wants the UCLA job. They're not sitting there. There aren't these superstar guaranteed lock Hall of Fame national championship coaches. Urban Meyer is not taking your phone call, University of Tennessee. Okay?
Right.
It's not happening. Like, so you're right. It's either an up-and-coming coordinator, a guy like Jeff Brohm at Purdue who's a rising star. But these guys are all risks, huge risks where you don't know what the upside is. So, that goes back. That speaks to another issue. I generally don't like firing a coach just to fire a coach. Don't operate in a vacuum. And John Curry's biggest job here is to keep it behind closed doors and to not operate in a vacuum. Have a plan, a succession plan. If you're going to make a move, know what that plan looks like, at least to some degree, and then go execute it as quickly and as tightly as possible. If that's the plan, then I'm okay with what John Curry decides.
Speaking of the plans, there's a plan that shocked many Titans fans yesterday. Rishard Matthews spoke out on his plan regarding the anthem. If you haven't heard it, you need to. We'll tell you what he said. We'll do it next. Don't forget, Mayor Megan Berry going to join us in just about an hour, 7:45. She's going to join us. Excited for that one, too. When we come back, though, what you may not have heard yet that you should hear from Rishard Matthews about what he intends to do regarding the anthem. Next up, Braden and Fitz, ESPN, 102.5 The Game.